Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel Esquire.
What a filthy job.
Could be worse.
How?
Could be raining.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for Wednesday, November 20th, 2019, episode number 49. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel.
And Frank, what a day, huh? What a day.
It's amazing. I feel like everything has been building to this moment, and we still have more moments to come. But wow, I mean, this is what we've been... This is what we've been talking about for, you know, near a year now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At least a year. For everybody who's listening, who either maybe overseas or just likes to hear our voice and really isn't paying attention to what's going on in the U.S., Ambassador Sondland appeared before the House today, for the House committee. And... Let's preface this, Frank, by saying this is one of Trump's guys, right? He donated, what was it, $1 million, I want to say, to Trump's election campaign. And so in return, Trump made him an ambassador because, you know, that's what you do. That's your qualification, I guess. Just give me a mill and I'll do anything you want. He made statements, and I want to say he either was in front of the committee, behind closed doors, and either before that or after that, also gave him a written statement. So I want to say this is his third time where he's had some sort of interaction with Adam Schiff and that committee. And this came about simply because, well, he wasn't exactly truthful in the last one. Or the last two, I should say.
There was one time where he gave closed door testimony, and then remember we talked about this. He amended his testimony, the deposition testimony. He got the transcript and he went back and said he refreshed his recollection.
Okay.
Recall that. So he actually was correcting it.
All right. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. So I'm glad you're on top of these things. Anyhow, I'm just going to read the headline from Politico, which is about 3 hours old, 3.5 hours old. Okay, so it's relatively new. By the way, his visit to the committee, his testimony just ended. What, Frank? Like a half an hour ago, maybe.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, for grins and giggles, it's close enough. And don't forget, folks, we're recording this, you know, a couple hours earlier before it goes up. Anyhow, the headline on Politico is, it was no secret, quote, it was no secret. Sondland says Trump ordered Ukraine pressure campaign. Was there a quid pro quo? The answer is yes, he said. So Sondland absolutely said unequivocally that there's no doubt. There was a quid pro quo. They were definitely holding up the arms. The aid. Thank you. In return for Zelensky's saying that there's going to be an investigation on Biden. Not only that, Sondland also threw just about everybody under the bus, saying that multiple top officials, including Pompeo, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence. Yes, that would be that Mike Pence, you know, the squeaky clean 13th disciple, and Mick Mulvaney all knew about the campaign to pressure Ukraine to announce investigations of Democrats. So even the mother's going to be pissed. I'm sorry. She's just going to be very upset. Anyhow, that was pretty much the gist of it. I mean, there's a lot more, and you're not going to get into a lot more, but let's just start there, Frank. You were listening to it. You were paying attention to it, as was I and everybody in our group that we have. What was your takeaways from it? I'd like to hear your view.
Well, you know, like you started to preface this, Master Patsy, and you did a good job with that. This is Trump's guy, okay? This is somebody who was not a holdover. He was not in any way a career diplomat, not somebody who's been in, quote unquote, the deep state that they try to paint people that you know, have been with the government for a long time. This is Trump's guy. This is a guy who, as you said very clearly, was he quote unquote, earned his position as a top diplomat in a very honey cherry-picked position in Europe by donating $1 million to Trump. So these two were in bed together, clearly. Trump came out today and tried to say, I don't know him very well. You know, I know him. He seems like a nice guy, but I know him, but I don't know him that well. Obviously trying to like buffer a little bit with his distance with this guy. But, you know, he can't really do that with him because it's clear that he picked this guy after he donated $1 million. The other kind of very damning thing in addition to the actual testimony is, as you alluded to, Sondland first said, no, there was no quid pro quo. I didn't know any quid pro quo. And then there were these text messages that came out from Volcker and others, and the text message chain and the email chain came out, and it clearly indicated that Sondland knew. And that's when he said, oh, my recollection's been refreshed. And he wrote down where he was wrong in his previous deposition testimony. And now he came forward in the light of day in front of America, God and country, and told everybody that there was, in fact, quid pro quo. And everybody knew about it. Pompeo, Mike Pence, you know, also he implicated Rudy Giuliani. He said everything went through Rudy. Everything was, you know, Trump told him to go through Rudy. Now, the Republican side of this is they want to say, well, you know, Rudy was his guy, basically. He just was the guy that was on, you know, the Ukraine job. He was the guy that knew Ukraine better than Trump did. So Trump was just putting his guy on it. But that's why you have diplomats. That's why you have a State Department. That's why you have, you know, official policies. So this is a problem for Trump because the guy who was providing him cover 2 or 3 weeks ago has now not only pulled back that cover, but he has just exploited the whole GOP criminal syndicate that was running foreign policy through a shadow foreign policy through Rudy Giuliani. And that's where I don't think there's any way back from this after today. The Republicans, we could talk about what they did today and what they tried to do to set this up in a different light, but it's just as plain and simple as that. This was Trump's guy who went back on his statement and revealed the truth, which everybody has already known, but it has not come out of the lips of a Trump guy. You know, he can't call this guy a never Trumper. He tried a little bit, like I said, by saying, I don't know him that well. And he also slipped this in. Trump slipped this in during his talk on the lawn before entering Marine One. He was with a different candidate. He got on board with me late. That was a statement that Trump said today about Sondland. Who gives a crap, quite frankly? He gave you $1 million for your campaign, and you rewarded him with this position. He's your guy. So that is my takeaway. I don't think there's any way back. Of course, the Republicans will try to, you know, those few Republicans that are going to hang on till the very end will try to characterize this in a way that is not the truth. But the truth is out there. The truth has been out there. It's now been confirmed by Trump people. Yesterday was pretty damning too with Pence's aide, Williamson. That was very damning. And I just don't see any way back from any of this for him.
I don't either. I'll be honest with you. I really don't. According to the Washington Post at 2:49, in his bombshell testimony, Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, implicated numerous members of Trump's cabinet in this unfolding story. Yada 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 yada. Going back to your point, we were talking about the Republicans that were on the committee. I want to talk specifically about Nunez. that fuckstick Jim Jordan and a representative Stewart. And when I listened to Stewart's questioning today, or basically didn't even, in 2 days, I haven't heard him ask a single question. I did, however, hear him. I swear to God, Frank, what he said today, his statement today was verbatim what he said yesterday. I don't even think he got somebody to rewrite his little spiel. He just literally took yesterday's memo and just started reading it today. Still going on and on and on about the server in the Ukraine. The name of the company that Biden's son was on the board, just literally said the same thing over and over and over. And, you know, that was the one take I got from it. And whenever I see that, I tend to think, look, this guy knows, you know, he's at least facing the reality that, you know, this ship has sailed. He's just playing his role, right? He's just being the good little soldier. But deep down, he knows this thing's dead and buried. But when you look at Nunez, who, and honest to God, Frank, I don't know who the bigger piece of work is, Jordan or Nunez. I want to say it's Jordan, but I think I want to say he's the bigger piece of work simply because he's just louder, you know, a little bit more obnoxious. But Nunez again went over this and I honest to God, I have no idea what the fuck Jim Jordan was even talking about today, right? I mean, you try to follow this guy, you know, I've had trig exams that were simple, easier to follow than what, you know, this guy, whenever he talks, right? He talks like he's on coke, first of all, and he just goes off on these tangents someplace, and then he looks at you and goes, right, am I right? Is that right? Is that right? Am I right? All right, that's what it is, right? That's what it is, right, right, right. And you're looking at him like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? But Nunez, who was just completely off the rails, he is still going on and on about this conspiracy, about how the Democrats are trying to, this is all fake. This is, you know, the Democrats have something up their sleeve. The witch hunt, yada 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 yada. Look, this is a political thing. It's in Congress for God's sake. By definition, it's political. But I got to tell you. If I'm a big fan of Schiff because I tend to be agreeing with him. You know, we kind of fall on the same side of the line. But if I was against him, if Schiff was a Republican, the way he's handling these things and the way he's doing it, whether I agree with him or not, is damn impressive. Unlike Nunez, who's the ranking Republican, who isn't doing anything like a ranking member of Congress should. I mean, he's acting like a child. Jordan's just acting like a spoiled child.
You know, I try to put myself in the thought process of saying, okay, as a lawyer, what would I do if I had to be on that side of the aisle, if I had to defend that side of the aisle? You know, their lawyer has done a decent job of trying to just stick to the idea of, well, let's talk about the timeline. He's doing the traditional thing of muddying the waters, and he's doing it in a way that's less confrontational. There were some tense moments. There were some confrontational moments with he and Sondland today.
Yeah, but Frank, not to interrupt you, but isn't that like part of the gig?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. I'm sorry. Go on.
No, you're right though, and that's part of it. You have to try to undermine the witness's credibility by showing him to be somebody who is rash or gets excitable or angry at something that they shouldn't get angry about. So, you know, the GOP attorney, he did a fair job, I would say, with what he's got to work with. But if you look at what it is, his strategy is clearly, as we've talked about many times before on this very show, muddy the waters. When you've got no good case, you try to muddy the waters. So he would try to go back through the timeline and try to trip up Sondland on his timeline. And he would try to show that at certain times along the timeline, he either knew or didn't know certain things to try to trip him up about that. Yesterday, he tried to do it with Vindman on the issue of the planting the seed of his quote-unquote dual loyalty to Ukraine and the United States, because he was born in the Ukraine and was asked to be on to be the defense minister of the Ukraine, or of Ukraine. I shouldn't say the Ukraine, of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is, you know, as I watched their attorney, the GOP attorney, you know, I think he's doing as well as he can. But then contrast that with the theatrics that are Nunes and Jim Jordan. And really, I don't think they're doing themselves or their party any good, because most people that watch this, as you said, Master Patsy, if you were on their side, or let's just say you're an independent, which you are, mm-hmm. if you're an independent and you watch this, these theatrics, I don't know how you come away with that without any other thought than these two guys are the paid clowns to try to distract the audience from what's going on.
I look. I always try to look at things as an independent, right? And I do so for a number of reasons. Basically, because I always identify myself as a martial artist first, right? It's always that's how I do things. So I kind of have to. I always look at things like a martial artist would, no matter what it is, no matter what job I'm doing, no matter how I'm doing, even whenever it comes to like how I handle raising my son. I always look at that as a husband, a father, everything. An engineer, everything I do, I always look at it that way. It's just my DNA. And so I look at these folks and I'm looking at this and I'm sitting back and I'm looking at it as an independent who doesn't have a horse in the race, which technically I don't. I just happen to, my tendencies tend to lead toward the very liberal democratic ways of doing it, the AOCs of the world, right? I mean, that's kind of the way I lean. So I'm looking at it like if you guys are doing this and we have an election coming up and you're representing the Republicans, I'm not so sure I want much to do with you. But that leads me to two questions, Frank, and I'm real curious to hear your thoughts. My first question is, I would like for you very much to critique the performance, for lack of a better term, and if that comes across a little disrespectfully, I apologize. But this is your wheelhouse: the performance of both counsels, both attorneys for the Republicans and the Democrats. How did you think both of critique both of them for me, if you could?
So I basically kind of already did talk about the GOP side counsel, But I will say this, to his credit, given what he has to work with, he's done an okay job. I don't think he's been horrible. I think he's maybe if you're a GOP, or let's say this, if you're a Trump diehard, if you're a MAGA red hat wearing person, you're probably not that thrilled with this guy because he's not putting on the show, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But if you're just watching it as an attorney and you're saying, let me just see how he's practicing his craft. I think he's done an okay job. I really do. He's kept a kind of a theme going. He's kept going back to the questions that matter most to him. I think he's tried to ingratiate himself to the witnesses at times. It comes off, I will say, in the negative side, it comes off a little not sincere when he does that. And it's like you probably could just set that aside because it's really not going to win you any points anywhere. But in the same token, I could see what he's trying to do. I could see where he's trying to soften up the witness at times. So I think he's done a good job with what he has. On the Democrat side, there have been times where I will say, as a general rule, just starting off the answer to your question, good. The guy's done a good job. He's been good at his craft. He's also kept to a theme. He's also tried to elicit the information that he needs to elicit in a way that's been, for the most part, clear and allowed the witnesses to answer the questions in a way that allows them to tell the story that they need to tell. So he's done his job, really. I mean, and I can't complain about either of their performances. To nitpick a little bit on the Democrat side, there are times like today, for example, because today is freshest in my mind, where if you're the Democrat side of the table or the side of the aisle that they're on, and you've gotten these bombshell revelations from Sondland,
I think there were times where he tried to get into the weeds a little bit too much with Sondland after that. And there's a temptation to do that because, look, you've got these great revelations. Now how much further can we take him? Mm-hmm. But it's a classic kind of like theme where it's a classic lesson in trial work when you're told by your trial lawyer teacher in law school, there's a moment where you sit your ass down, okay, mm-hmm. and you just shut up. Because you've gotten enough. Any more than that is going to get you into trouble. And I don't think that happened where he didn't get into trouble, but he got into the weeds so much that it may have confused things. And it also turned the witness a little bit. Sondland was clearly wanting to spill the beans today, right? He wanted to get out in front of this as much as he could. But when the Democrat counsel got up and started kind of getting into the weeds with him, he was very careful. Sondland was very careful to parse out, again, what he knew when, and when he knew what he knew, and what impact that would have had on his thinking at that time, because he still wants to protect himself in that respect. And I thought that's where maybe he strayed a little bit too much, or maybe should have just shut up about those kind of questions. Because then when he went back to the Republican side, Sondland was again defensive, and that defensiveness made his kind of almost to the, not hostility, but close to that, made him oppose any kind of foray by the GOP council into trying to trip him up. So I just felt like if you read the tea leaves with this witness, you kind of want to let him say his piece. Don't get too much with the weeds with him, because then you run the risk of asking questions that lead to places you really don't want to go.
Yeah, I from the outside looking in, I thought both gentlemen were, I want to say somewhat combative when needed, even though that's a little bit more dramatic than it actually was. But I thought they were when they had to be, and they were very easy at times whenever they thought they had to be. The one glaring difference I saw is it looked like the counsel for the Democrats had a far stronger supporting cast, being the other Democrats, where they were all kind of on the same point. They were all kind of reading from the same script, so to speak. And on the Republican side, his supporting cast was just kind of all over the place. And it was very difficult for him to lay down any kind of foundation or groundwork and let those guys just kind of, build the house on the foundation again, you know, to use a metaphor, because these guys were all over the map. So I don't think that the Republican congressman did their council any favors. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they didn't help him out much. So you're right. Whenever you said he didn't have a lot to work with, that's true on many levels, I think. I said I had a couple questions for you. Here's my second question. Over the last 2 days, because there's been how many hours of testimony over the last 2 days, and there's more coming, right? I mean, it may have even started by now. I don't know. You kept hearing Rudy Giuliani's name over and over and over again. I can't tell you how many people, what, 1, 2, 3, 5 people over the last 2 days, I think, up to this point. I kept mentioning Giuliani over and over and over again. So my second question to you, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek question, but you're going to understand where I'm going with this. Seeing what he's now facing and what he was facing before this week, would you want to be his attorney?
Absolutely not.
How many times in our group did you see me write? Because kept writing, you know, the same 4 words over and over again. If not, I've been telling Kelly, one of our friends in our off to the side, have been saying the same 4 words over and over again. Rudy's going to jail. I kept saying it over and over again. Do you think he's just your opinion? Do you think he's going to he's going to start looking at to save his own ass, or do you think he's so embedded and so entrenched with Trump that he's going to he's willing to go down with the ship? Because I'm pretty sure not Pompeo, who's the other one? Barr. I'm pretty sure Barr's going.
Yeah, I think Barr's crazy. You know, he's lost his mind. He's definitely down these rabbit holes with his life and his career. And, you know, you just hear these speeches that he's given in different places. And the man is just, he's just a strange person. And you could say the same thing about Rudy. But the thing about Rudy is, you know, he's such a wild card that he could change his mind from minute to minute. You know, yeah. I think Barr is so like committed to this whatever mission or, I mean, you see him, I think he's like, go back to the days of like the people running through the Crusades and the belief that he was placed here on earth to be part of the Crusades or something. You know, this guy's, he's really, really whacked. Okay. But like, he's so committed to that. He's not going to stray. Whereas Rudy, like, he changes with the wind. Like, 1 minute you ask him, was there, you know, a request to help out with this investigation? No. Then the next minute you ask him, damn right there was, you know, of course I asked him to help out with the investigation, you know? So he's such a wild card that I wouldn't be surprised that he would flip. Let me put, who knows what the hypothetical could be, but to answer your question, let's just venture out in this hypothetical world. Let's say for somehow, some way, the Republican Party could salvage Mike Pence. I don't think they could do it, but let's say they think they could salvage him until the election time. And then they say to Rudy, here's how we can do this. You've got to get on board with us, throw Trump under the bus, throw a couple other people under the bus, tell them that Pompeo hired you not to be a back channel person, but to actually be a State Department person and go run this thing for Trump. And then Pompeo bites the bullet. Trump bites the bullet, and we try to salvage the Republican Party, and we'll give you a nice deal if you do that for us, Rudy. You know, I don't think they can salvage Pence, but this is a crazy hypothetical. Yeah. But you know where they're going with things with the Republican Party, I could see something akin to that. You know, where they offer that kind of branch to Rudy, and Rudy thinks, well, gee, you know, sounds good to me. I just want the power. I just want to be able to stay out of jail, and I want to be able to make money in the Ukraine, and I want to be able to stay in power in the government and have my connections in the government and be able to go on CNN when I want to. And this all sounds great to me. You know, yeah. I mean, he's not committed to anything but himself. So I could see that happening.
Yeah, the thing is, and I don't know if you read, you know, what I had said earlier, Trump's not going to, he's not going to do the Nixon thing, right? He's going to burn it to the ground. You know, he's not only is he going to burn it to the ground, he's going to lay Rudy and Pompeo and Barr and Pence, he's going to light them all on fire too. He doesn't know any better. He can't help himself. Sondland, according to the Washington Post, stated that Mulvaney personally froze aid at Trump's discretion, aid to Ukraine, a week before the July 25th call with Zelensky. So now Sondland has directly figured Mulvaney as the person who can shed light on Trump's motives. So we're probably going to hear from him, or at least we should. Also, Sondland also implicated Pence, and I'm paraphrasing the article, by saying he personally informed Pence of concerns over frozen military aid and communicated to Pence that he understood that the money and the meeting were conditional on Ukraine announcing, the meeting being a meeting at the White House, were conditional upon Ukraine announcing the investigations Trump wanted. The quote was, after this was put out, Sondland said, I'm sorry, the vice president nodded like, you know, he heard what I said. Under Democratic questioning, Sondland clarified that Pence didn't dissent from what Sondland told him, although Pence quickly issued a denial to this to underscore this whole thing even more. He also implicated Pompeo by saying Pompeo had direct knowledge of his own view that the frozen military aid's fate was linked to Ukraine doing Trump's bidding. And that was according to the exchange that he had with Adam Schiff. This kind of, in a way, though, makes this thing go on a little longer, because the Democrats are going to be damn stupid if they don't start going after a whole lot more people now. You know, they're not going to, I don't think they can wrap this up quite yet. Do you?
Well, I don't think it does any good wrap up. You heard, I don't want to go off on do so. I, you know, you saw Ken Starr, who's been a
I mean, I'm pretty sure you're going to want to hear from at least Mulvaney.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Can you? So I think that, you know, we heard from Ken Starr today saying that he thinks that they can wrap up this impeachment quickly, that they put the articles of impeachment out there maybe as soon as this week. I think that's true, but I think that the problem is you run the risk of then pushing this over to the Senate without building enough of the public opinion around it and enough pressure. And I think with more witnesses coming forward and hearing from Mulvaney, maybe hearing more about Pompeo, seeing things come to light in front of the American public, I think it puts more pressure on the Senate when it ultimately gets to a trial.
Yeah, I think you're right. I ultimately, this is going to come down to public opinion, right? And as long as the folks in the Senate, as long as 20 folks in the Senate are safe, they're safe, right? I'm sorry, 21. Then this thing's going to die in the Senate. Right now, I'm speaking out of turn to say that right now, as if they were to have the trial and everything ended it today, he's going to survive the Senate, I think. I don't see Trump not surviving the Senate right now, just based on what the polling showed.
Unless they want
seem to be losing you, dude. Well, looking at all of this, like I said before, it's going to be very, very, very difficult for the people under Trump to weasel their way out of this. They're on the hook for a lot, and the closer this gets to Trump, the more he's going to throw them under the bus. I think I don't see too many people who's not the president surviving this. And I seem to have lost you, Frank. Oh, well, you know what? That's okay. Let's wrap it up. Are you back?
I'm back. I had to reconnect. I'm sorry about that, everybody in the audience. I think, I don't mean to jump in right where you were, but I think that, wanted to just address something you asked me earlier. I think we need to, you talked about the public opinion moving, and I said, maybe there's a possibility that the Senate could move this to a secret ballot. And I think it's still unlikely that they would do that, but there is a chance that they could change their own rules and vote for a secret ballot. And in that case, again, you know, kind of all bets are off. They could vote to remove him from office if that happened.
From what I understand, Frank, they only need, for some reason, I'm saying three senators to kind of push this or to go along with it or something like that, and you actually can have a secret ballot?
If you assume that all Democrats and independents will vote to have a secret ballot, then you would need three Republican senators to go along with it. That's correct.
That's, I'll be honest, that's entirely doable, I would think, especially if you've got three of these guys that are up for re-election and they're not really 100% sure of the re-election bid. I could see that this happens.
Yeah, it could happen. But I think that, you know, to answer your earlier question, I think we have to hear from more witnesses. I think it does better for the public to hear more from other people. I don't know if the Democrats go after the other people per se in an impeachment proceeding, other than to say, let's put you on the record. And then if you lie, then we can go after you for contempt. And if you tell the truth, then obviously that strengthens our case. And it also may shame that person into resigning. So I think there's a lot to be benefited by continuing on these hearings and proceeding on with trying to force some of these people to come forward and testify.
Yeah, even if it's just a token and they deny it, right? Even if they you know, even that makes the Democrats' case a little stronger, I would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I'm real curious to see what happens tonight. I really am, because this is this is just going to. I mean, it's what happens tonight. Like I said, it may be going on right now. I don't know. I don't think is going to be nearly as explosive as today was, but or earlier today. But boy, today was something else.
I don't want to give short shrift to yesterday. I mean, we had some serious things come out yesterday. We talked a little bit about it with Williamson, and we talked a little bit about it with Vindman. But you know, Vindman, let's give a little credit there, because this is a guy who, you know, has a Purple Heart, served our country, was injured in Iraq. His family fled the Soviet Union. He talked a little bit about that yesterday, for the idea and the ideal of America. And he was fighting for that ideal yesterday, and he put himself out there. And you could hear it in his voice. You could see it in his face. You know, he really wants to fight for the ideal of what America is and what it should be. And, you know, I still think that holds meaning to a lot of people. There are people that view the world through Trump glasses, and they want to say that this guy is part of some big conspiracy. Well, what was important about yesterday also is that Volcker shot down a lot of those conspiracy theorists. He said, you know, especially about Biden, he said, you know, Biden is a man of integrity. I've known him for over 20 years, and all this talk about him being corrupt is absolutely false. And it's a conspiracy theory that has no basis in truth. He's an absolutely man of integrity. So I thought it was important to hear that also from people. You know, so yesterday's hearings were not as explosive as today's, but they were just as important.
Yeah, that's a great point, Frank. That's an absolutely great point. You're talking about an absolute 100% bona fide true American hero, right? And I think there was a couple of Democrats who said a few words to him that I really think he kind of got a little choked up. And he thought he did a pretty good job of trying to disguise it. But if you were watching him and the camera was on him, you could tell that, you know, some of it meant a great deal to him. And I think that was very important to see. And it goes back to your point where you're absolutely right. A lot of these MAGA nuts won't recognize that, won't recognize the legitimacy of that and what words like that meant to somebody who damn near died defending us. It's a shame. It's a damn shame. But a true hero should not have been treated the way some of these folks treat. I mean, who was the asshole that questioned him wearing his dress uniform to Congress yesterday? I mean, that's either ignorant as fuck or ballsy as hell. I have no idea which one it is. I think if maybe you retired and you were a higher rank than him, then maybe you can say shit like that. But if you've never served a day, or you did serve and you were nowhere near his rank, shut the fuck up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was ignorant as shit. Yeah, even Jordan didn't get that ignorant. I expected that garbage from him. Oh, well, good place to stop, Frank. Great job as always. Really, really good pod today. Is there anything you want to say before we stick a fork in this thing?
You know, it's the moments that we've been waiting for. History's unfolding in front of us. We're either blessed or cursed to be a part of it. I like to say that we're probably blessed to be here and watch this democracy in action. And I thank you for giving us the opportunity to be talking about these on a weekly basis. You're doing a great job, Patsy, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
The honor is mine, my friend. Yeah, we are living through history, and I think overall we're very fortunate to be living it, because we don't have to rely on a textbook or somebody else's interpretation. We're actually living it, and it's tough now, and it's tough to deal with, but you know what? It gives you character. To everybody listening, thank you as always. Your time is very valuable, and the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. It honest to God, truly does. So on behalf of Frank and myself, and until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't get that joke, you're far too young to be listening to us. And until then, goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
The elders like to fall in the mud and get kicked in the head by an iron boot. Of course you don't. No one does. It never happens. Sorry, Ted. It's a dumb question. Skip that.
Thanks for listening to Holy Shit with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy shit.